When they opened her coffin, they found her perfectly preserved inside, her cheeks still flushed. When they found him drinking the blood of farm animals, he said it was only so he could feed those who fed on him. This is the true crime story of two vampires, one who closed the book on 1800s New England vampire hysteria, and one who licked his grandmother's bleeding wounds 100 years later. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. You found me again out in this creepy forest, just in time for another spooky story for the month of October. And this time, we're talking vampires. They've been around since pretty much forever, and these bloodsuckers, as we think of them today, came from the lore of 18th century Eastern Europe. But one of the most famous vampires is a relatively modern-day story, and it happens to be about a lady. Hey, girls can suck blood too. Her name was Mercy Brown, and she's known as the last New England vampire. Back in the 1800s, people were dying right and left from tuberculosis, a bacterial infection that attacks the lungs and spreads by coughs and sneezes. There was no cure, and the only treatment was like, go outside and get some exercise. So the overwhelming majority of people died, and it was super scary. And when people in the U.S. get scared, we make up stories about things. So everyone assumed it must be supernatural forces at work, and vampire panic began in New England. And then in Rhode Island, the Transylvania of North America, Mary Eliza Brown, mother of five and wife to George, got the night sweats in 1883, and then the phlegmy cough, and then up came the blood, with a painful death soon to follow. 6 months later was eldest daughter Mary Olive, who died in much the same way. The family was safe for a little while, but then son Edwin got it in 1891 and moved his wife out to Colorado, where the climate was supposed to be better for treating the disease. And he did get better. He moved back home in 1892, ready to live out the rest of his long, full life in Rhode Island. But then his TB roared to life again, and sadly, his 19-year-old sister, Mercy Lena, got the infection too, probably from him and his germ spreading. She died soon after. Now, their dad was obviously a wreck over all of these women and his family dying, and the townsfolk were like, hey, here, let us help you get over your grief by telling you someone you loved was a vampire. The legend went that when a bunch of family members were all dying of TB, it was because one of the already dead ones was popping out of their graves at night and secretly sucking the life force from everyone else. Basically, the only way to stop his only son from passing away like the rest of them was to dig up the corpses of his wife and daughters and figure out who the culprit was. The dad believed in science and medicine and initially brushed it off. But people in the town reported that they saw Mercy walking through the fields at night, through the cemetery. Her sick brother said that he could feel Mercy sitting on his chest, suffocating him. With no cure for tuberculosis remotely in sight, the father realized that killing the vampire might be his only chance. He and some of the townspeople went to the graveyard on March 17, 1892, the cover of darkness hiding his skepticism. The local doctor even came along just to be nice. They exhumed the bodies one by one, and in his wife's and oldest daughter's coffins, there were only dry bones. But because Mercy had died in January and the ground had been too frozen for digging, her coffin was waiting in a holding vault in the cemetery. So with their breath caught in their throats, they moved to the vault. They pulled her coffin from it, and inside, they found a girl as beautiful as the day she'd been laid to rest. No rot, no decay. Face still flushed. Blood still in her heart and liver. It even appeared as if her hair and nails had grown. Obviously, she was a vampire. The doctor was like, hold up, it's like 10 degrees in this state at all times of the year. Of course her body was preserved. But no one was hearing that nonsense. So there were two options. Either you turned the body of a vampire over so it couldn't escape its coffin, or you simply removed its head and organs. So they probably decapitated her so her head could be placed on her chest later. Then the doctor was forced to take out Mercy's heart and liver, and the townspeople burned her stolen organs on a nearby rock. Then they obviously mixed the ashes with some water and fed that delicious slurry to George's only remaining child. He, of course, died. Mercy was then finally buried in the Chestnut Hill Baptist Church Cemetery in Exeter, Rhode Island. People leave flowers and gifts for her, this young woman forever assumed to be a vampire in what became known as the Vampire Capital of America. It's said that about 100 people were exhumed in the 75 years of the New England vampire hysteria, but Mercy is the most famous. And when Bram Stoker died in 1897, newspaper clippings about Mercy's death were found in the Dracula author's files. And there may not be hysteria anymore, but the lure of vampire lore is still alive and well. In Marshfield, Massachusetts in 1980, James Jimmy Riva II was a long-haired, unemployed 22-year-old. Just the sort of hoodlum that really ruffles an 80s grandma's feathers. Riva had been living with his grandmother, Carmen Lopez, for several months before he moved in with his granduncle instead due to some disagreements. On April 10, 1980, Riva asked that his granduncle give him a ride to a nearby town where he could borrow a car from his dad. He then drove that car to his 74-year-old grandma's house, where he found her alone, lying on a couch. She asked him to do some laundry for her because she was confined to a wheelchair, and he agreed. He wasn't such a ruffian after all, despite that long hair. But then he went down to the cellar where he'd previously hidden a gun and some bullets he painted gold. He said that if he hadn't painted them, if they weren't gold, they wouldn't have found their mark. His grandmother, startled by the first shot, threw a glass at him. So he shot her again, stabbed her in the heart, and poured gas on her. He sucked the blood from her bullet wounds. He lit her on fire in her own bedroom and rolled her wheelchair in there behind her. He hid the gun in a ditch and covered it with leaves, but unfortunately for Riva, a painter working nearby had seen him enter his grandmother's house that day. In jail, Riva told his mother that his brain was on fire, his stomach hurt, and that he had to talk to someone about the voices in his head. He admitted to her that he had been a vampire for more than 4 years. The devil came out of the sun one day, he said, and told him he must drink blood, he must be a vampire, and the devil stayed in his head to answer any questions he might have. In court, Riva's mom said that his behavior had been distressing from an early age. In kindergarten, he'd started drawing pictures of bleeding people and people being shot. Later, he liked drawing pictures of vampires and women dripping blood. Foods that looked like blood had a special place in his heart, and he liked to mix ketchup, oil, and meat into his own little nasty concoction. He wouldn't sleep for long periods, liked to run away from home, had run-ins with the police, had been raiding medicine cabinets as far back as 13 years old, and did terribly in school. He was committed to psychiatric hospitals because of threats against his father and told his mother that voices from outer space were telling him what to do. He killed a cat and dissected its brain to see if he could learn how to fix his own brain. On the day of the murder, the voice in his head told him he'd die if he didn't kill his grandmother and drink her blood. He did as he was told. Now, clearly, Riva had a long history of mental illness, but he was deemed competent for trial and sentenced to life in prison for second-degree murder on October 31, 1981. Yes, Halloween. He also got 20 years for the arson. He says that he believed his grandmother was poisoning him, that he could smell it in the food she cooked. And he was only sneaking into farmers' barns and drinking blood from cows and horses because he was himself a source for other vampires and needed to replenish himself. He claimed that as a child, his mother abused him, forced him to drink her witch's brew, and did weird witch rituals on him. In 1990, he stabbed a prison guard whom he thought was sneaking into his cell to drain him of his spinal fluid, but he was found not guilty by reason of insanity. He says this was a painful lesson that he can't get off his meds. In 2014, Riva said his mental illness has been under control for 15 years, ever since he started receiving the medication he needed, but he was denied parole. The board took note of people sending him vampire fantasy letters and asking for his beard trimmings, but he said he would never provide them anything that would glorify the crime. In 2020, he was denied again, in part because his family urged the board not to release him.
Marshfield's police chief urged the parole board to keep Riva behind bars. He says the murder weapon has never been found.
According to Mr. Riva, he encased it in plastic and buried it at a location only he knows. I'm fearful if he gets out into the community, he's the only one that knows where that firearm is.
James P. Riva, the so-called schizophrenic vampire, will be eligible for parole again in 2024. The way we misunderstand those with mental illnesses still today reminds me of the way we misunderstood the so-called vampires of early American history. In a way, it's so interesting to learn about the side effects of diseases that led to vampire mythology, like the way tuberculosis would make people bleed from their mouths as if they had been drinking blood, or the blood disorder, porphyria, which causes people to be sensitive to the sun to the point that it'll blister their skin. It also gives them receded gums that make their teeth look longer. it's, you know, kind of neat to see where these archetypes come from, but maybe we should be a little kinder to people with diseases. So what do you think? Are you more Dracula or Edward Cullen? Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.